going to be talking about the last chapter in our book, which is Ideas of Power by Ernest Holmes. And we have been reading two of his books this year. One is The Anatomy of Healing Prayer, and then this book, The Ideas of Power. And they're two of the most profound and final books. And they're different from the others because they weren't highly edited. So they're very conversational, and they're a joy to read. So next year, to give you an advance warning, we're going to be working our way through the book, The Essential Ernest Holmes. There's actually a Science of Mind class with this title. But this is one of my favorite books, and when I mentioned it to Connie, she was like, let's go for it. So we're going to be starting out. Our first lecture will be on the chapter, There Is One Life. And the chapter I'm going to talk about from Ideas of Power is God in Your Personality. Scary thought. So the chapter opens with a very thought-provoking idea that all we have to do is be ourselves, and then we'll be great, because God made us great. God is within us. So why would we ever think of ourselves as anything but great? And yet, a lot of the puritanical beliefs, I remember a phrase, we are but worms. Well, Winston Churchill, who's one of my favorite characters in history, said, we are all worms, but I believe I am a glowworm. And that's kind of how things evolve. You know, we're perfect, but there are parts of us that need work. We're always in the process of growing and evolving. So, I love Churchill. Holmes himself said that there are gradations of unfoldment or evolution from the lowest to the highest. And just as there are beings below us in awareness, there must be beings way beyond us. And you think about it. I mean, we've all lived long, except for Lavanya, we've all lived long enough we can see ourselves and how we have evolved through our lives. You know, experiences cause us to grow. And so the basic premise of this whole chapter is that we are in the process of evolution. We're born with the image of God, each of us, and we possess the power of greatness within us. And that's a central belief in our movement. So Walt Whitman said that the center of everything nestles the seed of perfection. And I love that thought because, you know, times like if I'm trying to walk around on my broken leg, I have to keep reminding myself, but underneath it all, I'm perfect. There's a perfect leg and a perfect ankle. So let's talk about somebody else whom I respect a great deal. It's Ludwig von Beethoven. He was from Bonn, Germany, and he was continues to be one of the most famous composers of all time. And he bridged the Baroque and Classic period with the Romantic period. So it was a huge evolution, not only in musical style, but also in thought. So he studied with Haydn, so he was well-schooled in the symphonies, and he may have known Mozart, but that's not a for sure yet. He showed musical talent at an early age. His father and his grandfather were both singers. Music was in the house, and that makes such a big difference when a child is brought up in an atmosphere of music. However, he started to go deaf when he was about 20. And so, you know, the cause was unknown, but it's been variously attributed to things such as syphilis, lead poisoning, typhus, or maybe even he had this habit of dunking his head in cold water to keep himself awake. I guess they didn't have coffee at that time. So he suffered a severe form of what they call tinnitus. So he had this constant roaring in his ears. And it made it hard for him as the disease progressed to appreciate music, and he avoided conversation with other people. And during the last decade of his life, he was almost completely deaf, and he stopped conducting and performing, and he just composed. So against these odds, he continued to compose, and he could have gotten enormously depressed, and probably was, but there's this part of him that knew he was great, that knew that he had something yet to say, and so the best music he wrote, like his late string quartets and his late symphonies, are some of the greatest music ever composed. And it was amazing. At the end of the premiere of the Ninth Symphony, he was conducting it. And they had, I don't know if he was conducting it, but he was on stage with his back to the audience, and they had to turn him around so he could see that all these people were standing up and applauding. Mm-hmm. So his deafness also affected his social life, and it probably affected his personality deeply. And he continued to compose, but as he became more inward facing, because as the outer world began to fade away, he wrote for himself. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a theme with people that evolve to positions of greatness, is they rely on themselves, on their inner greatness. And so, he had a lot of awareness of current events at the time, and you can see some of that reflected in his music. And, who was the poet that wrote the Ode to Joy? It's a pop quiz.
Isn't that Schiller?
Schiller.
Schiller.
Yeah.
I've been saying Schiller. Excuse me, Schiller.
Schiller. Yes. One of the greatest playwrights of all time.
Oh, I didn't know.
Poets, yeah. Mm. So he also loved the outdoors, and he loved nature as well. And one of the biggest disappointments in his life was that he had a really strong desire to marry, and he had several relationships, but nobody decided to marry him. And he became increasingly difficult to get along with, and he was subject to rages as his deafness increased. And the reason I'm going into all of this is not because I want to bore you with a lot of musical history details, but to kind of show you there was a human being who was, he had that seed of greatness within him, but he also had the imperfections, as all of us do. So there was nobody around that was composing like Beethoven was at the end of his life. It was way too evolved or advanced for the audiences of the time, because, you got to understand that the music business itself was evolving from the patronage system, where you had small groups of audiences that were listening to music, and the musician was paid to compose and to perform. And you begin to have the advent of the concert halls, and, at the same time, the instruments started to evolve as well so that they could be heard in concert halls. So Beethoven was at the front of all of this. And but he expected the audiences in his later life to just accept what he wrote, and mm-hmm. he wasn't always, he wasn't always appreciated. So what he said is, these pieces are not for you, but for a later age.
I know.
But, getting back to Holmes, you think about the comparisons. So Beethoven wrote some very advanced works. Even now, if you listen to the late Beethoven quartets, which I'm sure you all do, you have a chance.
Daily.
It's like Holmes. At the time, his ideas may have been advanced for that time, but now, at least to us, they seem pretty normal. So we continue to evolve as a society, and so we're always on that path of eternal progress, no matter what it may look like. For instance, my falling and breaking a leg and my ankle, while it certainly wasn't something I would seek to do, I didn't get up that morning and say, I think I'll break a leg. I know that in back of it, there's some goodness that comes out of it. And so I'm looking forward to see what will evolve. For one thing, I get to spend more time with myself, my favorite person.
As it should be.
Exactly. So, thinking about it, does this mean that Beethoven's deafness was a gift? that brought him in touch with his divine inner presence. Whether or not he was aware of it, you know, was it in the end, with the masterpieces that were composed at that part of his life, was that the gift of that particular, what we might call an affliction? So I think it was a gift. He wasn't a religious scientist, so he might not have thought in those terms, but I think for all of us that we need to keep reminding ourselves that we are a perfect person. Inside of us, there is perfection. Each one of us. And Holmes said, any person who will listen long and deeply to that divine reality within himself will become aware of it, and he will gradually be directed by it. And he will know, and nothing can dissuade him of this sublime, supreme fact that there is more to a man than is contained between his head and his bootstraps, that he is an immortal being on the pathway to eternal self-expression, and that there is no final question about the safety or validity of his soul. So what do you think it takes to listen to that perfect man within ourselves? And if you ask that question for yourself, what would it take to listen? Because that's in me, that's in each one of you. What do you think it takes?
A little quiet.
Mm-hmm. A little
too quiet. Too quiet? Maybe. Maybe. What do you think, John?
I would echo that thought about becoming quiet, getting out of the way. And in the yoga philosophy, with Raja Yoga, we have the idea of layers of the body. This outermost layer we call the food sheath. It's the physical realm. But getting out of the way of that, letting go of family, friends, favorite possessions, going inner and more in, we find a realm, I'm told, that we can connect with the divine. And through meditation, that requires being quiet, and I would say that that's necessary, getting out of the way of ourselves, in my opinion.
I think trusting what comes through. Mm-hmm. He didn't discount what was coming through him because of his quirks.
Well, I want to suggest something different, aside from being quiet. What happens if you listen to a great piece of music? Mm-hmm. Look at a great piece of art?
Inspiration.
You feel inspiration. Yeah. So inspiration and being quiet are two ways. Any other ideas?
Nature. Look at a tree or the sky.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes revisiting what you already know. Mm-hmm. And I know that's right now. That's what's going on with me. Is I get to revisit all the stuff that I know. So I get to say, what is the truth? You know, all the time. What is the truth here? Mm-hmm. What is the truth? So.
I think sometimes acceptance and forgiveness, it's like sometimes we're sitting around and we're, you know, even when I get quiet, sometimes I feel like it's like, I can do that, or, you know, I'm no good at that, or I find myself doing yoga and it's like my hip plays up and I can't stand on that leg, and it's like, you know, oh, I'm not good enough at this. And it's like, you've got to forgive you, or accept the fact that your body is where it is and it can do what it can do. You can aspire to more. And you've got to just accept where you are and forgive those things you've done that you know maybe you feel like were the wrong thing to do, and be able to move on from that, and so you can be at peace. And when you're at peace, then you can come out more new things.
I think going along with that, I feel like trying to be fearless and not when things that come up to you that are. They seem unusual or something, like, don't just immediately walk them down and go, well, that's no good, or I don't like that, or that's dumb, or whatever. But being fearless to say, let me follow that thought. You know, is this real? Is this something real? Maybe there's something I need to think about here.
And on the other side of that is, for me right now, is feeling vulnerable mm-hmm. and Stephen, being at peace with being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. It's right up there.
It's like, hmm? I'm exposed now.
At the brain.
Like, okay. Now I can be at peace with this and find some peace in being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we can be so fearless and so positive and everything, but the other end of that is that we've got to be willing to be vulnerable too, and to feel safe there, and know that we are safe in feeling vulnerable.
I think the fear and vulnerability are sort of the same. When you're afraid of being. Of being open, that you might think of something or write a song or something that people won't like, and you know that's a vulnerable thing, but it's rooted in fear still.
Or you're making decisions, personal decisions that your sister or your best friends or the people like that don't approve of. It's mm-hmm. like, well, you know what? It's my life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nobody gets to live it but me.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I like improving myself for myself and knowing that I am perfect just the way I am. There are things I would like to do yoga better. I would like to do this, but that's a personal thing. I am already perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And go from there.
I like that. What you were saying about yoga class made me think of my yoga class, and they do a focus on perfection strategy, which is if your physical body is not there to do a pose, then you are supposed to sit comfortably and visualize yourself in your physical body mm-hmm. holding that mm-hmm. pose perfectly. Mm-hmm. So you focus on the perfection of it, and they say that it brings the same benefit to your body
wow.
to mentally
yes.
do the pose
wow. yes.
to focus on the perfection of it.
Athletes do that in training. They uh-huh. they mm-hmm. you know put themselves visually through running the race or what have you, and it has a physical effect. It's quite something.
Well, it's like focusing on success, which I didn't even know I did years ago when I just started being a salesman. I did. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I just expected that, of course, they're going to say yes to me. And you know what? Quite often, most of the time, they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never surprised about it. It was like, well, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really didn't know that I was already somehow influenced by maybe it's the psychic and mediumship up in Lilydale and that kind of thing, which I'm sure I heard a lot of their new age stuff. But for me, the biggest thing with going within is patience. Because I'm not a great meditator. I don't like to do it. It's like, come on, let's get this over with. Even that guided meditation, I'm already there and coming back. And I'm like, oh.
Listen, fast forward. So I can speed it up and listen.
Yeah, yeah. I have things to do.
Yeah.
Or I don't, but it doesn't matter. I still, anyways, for me it is that patience. And I'm still working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the moment, too, that's the other thing about being there, isn't it? You know, it's like when you're in the yoga pose, that like a chair that I find is like, oh, good.
I don't want to be in the moment.
And it's like, hold it for 5 breaths. And I'm like, oh. If you stay in the moment with it, it's much easier to
yeah.
do than trying to figure out, well, when is it going to end?
These are all great ideas. Thank you. So I'm going to close. I was going to do a longer reading from one of the Holmes meditations, but mm-hmm. I think we're going to have a meditation pretty soon.
Great.
So I just want to say, you know, think of yourself as having that same seed of perfection within you that Winston Churchill and Ludwig von Beethoven and all these other great people have. It's within us. And we just need to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is.
So it is.
So it is.
Thank you, Judy.